Zero CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Challenges to the White House bid for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Sources tell ABC News his campaign fired about a dozen staffers after making a decision to cut costs. The governor was criticized by former President Donald Trump, who spoke at a conservative event in West Palm Beach, Florida, and touted the record from his first 4 years in office.
Did something that nobody else could have ever done. What we did during that period of time was incredible. And more importantly now, we're going to do it again, and we're going to do it even better.
In Georgia, authorities are searching for a man identified as Andre Longmore, accused of shooting and killing four people in the city of Hampton on Saturday. In Pennsylvania, Michael Burham's back in custody after 9 days on the run. He broke out of a county jail in the northwestern part of the state July 6th. He was apprehended Saturday. In the Philadelphia suburbs, flooding killed three people and left four missing in Bucks County. More than 50 million people in the Northeast are under flood alerts. This is ABC News. Authorities have been at the New York home of architect Rex Huerman. He's now charged with killing three women whose bodies were found dumped in a remote area of Long Island more than a decade ago. Beginning in 2010, 10 bodies were found in that wooded site. Huerman's considered the prime suspect in a fourth death, but what about the other six? Suffolk County Police Commissioner Rodney Harrison says the investigation's not over.
The task force is going to remain intact. We're going to see if he's involved with the other deaths, and if not, then we'll continue to go after those that committed these crimes and hold them accountable.
Finance officials from G20 nations meeting in India. That's where Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen called for international creditors to provide debt relief for low-income countries.
Over half of all low-income countries are near or in debt distress. This is double the share of countries that were in this situation in 2015.
Brian Clark, ABC News.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
It feels like they're trying to pit the teachers against the parents, and all of us can come together to say, look, stop trying to, you know, divide and conquer and work with us. And they're still trying to hide and say, well, the JFC cut it. There's nothing I can do. Yes, there is. You can vote for the amendment to continue child care counts.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8.
On your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Bees and other pollinators are on the decline across the United States. As Danielle Smith reports, some members of Congress are proposing new rules to protect them.
The reintroduction of the Saving America's Pollinator Act aims to protect bees, birds, butterflies, bats, and hummingbirds by addressing the effects of pesticides and other toxins on their habitats. Lori Ann Bird at the Center for Biological Diversity says the bill would increase the collaborative role for the new Center for Pollinator Conservation and give the public a voice in science-based decision-making. She says saving pollinators is essential for the future of food production.
One amazing thing about pollinators is that we all recognize we need them. One in every three bites of food that we eat needs insect pollination, and we know that our lives without pollinators would be infinitely more bleak.
This is the fifth time the Saving America's Pollinator Act has been introduced in Congress in the last decade. Bird points out the current legislative effort coincides with the Environmental Protection Agency's plan to implement safeguards for 27 of the most vulnerable endangered species, including some pollinators from pesticides.
The list includes birds, fish, plants, mammals, all species that are especially impacted by pesticides.
She encourages people to put flowering plants in their yards and gardens, especially native plants, as pollinators rely on a wide range of plants to meet their basic needs. I'm Danielle Smith. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. It is Saturday, July 15th, 2023, and this is our weekly review, our analysis, and our discussion of those very most important stories, those events in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you for joining me on this important Saturday morning. This is our 55th broadcast here from the studios of Civic Media. We are coming to you from studios here in Waukesha, but we're broadcasting throughout the listening areas and regions in Wisconsin, and those include WMDX in Madison, WRJN in Racine, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, WXCO in Wausau, WBZH in Hayward, WLAK in Amory, WISS in Oshkosh, WGBN in Green Bay, W22-8EP, The Tap in Eau Claire, WRCE in Richland Center, and WLCX in La Crosse. Delighted to have listeners from throughout the state of Wisconsin joining us this morning on Morning Cannolis, our review, our examination, our interactive discussion involving you as well on those issues of government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always this morning, we're going to be taking your phone calls, your comments, your questions, your observations about the important issues of the day. That phone number is 844-967-2789. Once again, 844-967-2789. And my exceptionally professional, personable, and engaging producer, Anya, is with me in the studio this morning, as always. And she has told me this morning something that I'm going to pass on to you as well. And that is, as a result of the new Civic Media app, you can contact us through Anya, who will get your calls into me. We can engage in that all-important discussion. We also have a new method for you to reach out and be involved in our discussion here on Morning Cannolis, and that is, again, through the new Civic Media app. All phones accessible. You simply download your particular station, and then you'll see options to either call or text, and you can either call or text. It's just that simple, as Anya promises me, and it is just that simple. We are encouraging both your texts and your phone calls this morning and all mornings going forward. In addition, this morning, some other important news coming out from Civic Media, another important community engagement initiative that we're very proud to discuss and tell you about this morning. I'm going to be participating in this month and encourage you to do as well. The Civic Media leadership and management is calling this Civic Pints. It is an opportunity to support the health, the safety, the security of all our community members. The process, the initiative is just this. Through this initiative, if you give blood sometime in the next couple of weeks during the month of July, you can, in fact, receive important gifts, recognition here through Civic Media for doing just that. You can go online, give blood, give us some indication that you have given blood here in the state of Wisconsin somewhere. Give us some evidence that you have done exactly that. Could be a selfie, could be some other form of evidence, whatever you've got. Send that to us as well, and send that to us through the URL, and we will enter you to win some spectacular prizes here through the offices of Civic Media. You might win Brewers tickets. You might win tickets to the State Fair coming up very soon, and also perhaps the very important and much cherished Civic Media grab bag of good, important things also available to you. Brewers tickets, State Fair tickets, Civic Media merchandise, all those kinds of things to thank you for participating in this initiative in this month of July called Civic Pints through the auspices of Civic Media. It is good to do it, not simply because we're encouraging you to do it, but because it's right and decent to do it in support of all of our members of our community throughout the state of Wisconsin, candidly, throughout the United States of America, and encouraging our safety, our security, our health, our well-being in our communities in this important state. So participate in that, and also go online and look more and find out more about Civic Pints on our Civic Media app, our Civic Media website, all of that accessible to you this morning. As always here on Morning Cannolis, we ask three important questions. We ask what happened. What happened during the course of the previous week, sometimes even beyond that? What are the facts? What do we know about what is happening out there in America, sometimes as this morning, even beyond America? Why are those things important? Why do we care? Why are they relevant? Why are they material to our understanding of our world around us? And what should we do? What, if anything, should we do in response, in answer to those important things happening in our world and our communities in Wisconsin and beyond? Our syllabus this morning, as always, is ambitious. It is achievable. And we've got a lot of things to discuss. We are coming to you this morning in the wake of our three broadcast arc, focusing on what? Focusing on the Supreme Court. We spent a lot of time in the past three broadcasts talking about many of the most important cases decided by our high court in this 2022-2023 term of its activity and its work. That term, for what it's worth, continues to this day. It is highly likely that during the course of the summer months just ahead, that there may be more activity coming out of our Supreme Court, but the big cases undeniably decided in the month of May and the month of June, and frankly, even continuing here with respect to discussion here in the month of July as well. And so this morning, we're going to spend a little bit of time in our first hour doing some recapping, some thinking about what all those cases mean. We'll do a bit of a summary of about 10 to 12 of those cases that we have spoken about. A lot of that, again, because of the good work that Anya and the producers here at Civic Media do, a lot of that has been placed on our website for you to review. You can listen to back shows also on our website. But this morning, we're going to review some of that and then do some big takeaways. What do we make of what the Supreme Court has done in this term? How does it compare to last term? What things should we be thinking about as we go forward into the next term, which, yes, again, begins in just about 10 weeks from now, believe it or not. The first Monday in October is always the first day of the new term of the Supreme Court. And already the Supreme Court has amassed about 19-20 cases that it has decided that it is going to be deciding, reviewing, soliciting briefs on, having oral arguments on in the coming year. Presumably, we're going to be talking about all of those as our broadcast continues in this year and certainly in next year as well. We're going to begin this morning by talking a lot about the rule of law, about the delivery of justice, and we're going to begin this morning by going overseas. Before we get to that, however, we're going to be spending much of our second hour bringing you back up to date on many of the investigations, a lot of the legal challenges being confronted by our former president, Donald Trump. Civil case, one in particular that got a lot of headlines this past week, but may have been somewhat under the radar in the national media. We're going to talk also about the pendency and the status and significant developments in connection with the investigations, criminal investigations involving January 6th, involving not only the matters in Washington, D.C., but also those taking place in Georgia. We'll spend some time talking about the Mar-a-Lago investigation and the indictment returned in that case a number of weeks ago, and then talk generally about the meaning of all of this as we go forward and understand what is happening in America, and again, with law, government, and justice as our principal focuses. Let us begin by talking about the rule of law in America by beginning to focus on some significant events happening overseas. And we're going overseas, as we did way back in March or so, to talk about significant rule of law, some discovered and undiscovered justice issues in the Republic, the State of Israel. Tens of thousands of Israelis this past week have demonstrated once again in connection with proposals of the Israeli government to overhaul, to change dramatically the balance of the rule of law in Israel. What this is all about? Well, they blocked roadsides once again to the main airport, the Tel Aviv airport, the Ben-Gurion airport there in Tel Aviv, a dozen other major thoroughfares in and out of major cities in Israel, sometimes, yes, clashing with police. And they're protesting basically at the core of this an overnight vote in the parliament called the Knesset. That's their parliament. And advanced some efforts, principally promoted by the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, to advance a fairly right-wing effort to limit judicial oversight of the government, to address rule of law in a non-positive way, and turn back in many ways what has been the foundation of the rule of law, not only in our country, but also, of course, in Israel, the foundation of every Western and non-Western nation that embraces democracy and the involvement of people in government and ensuring that their government is responsive to them. Thousands of those protesters poured into the streets throughout the State of Israel this past week, the main terminal again at Ben-Gurion Airport, honking horns, chanting slogans, holding signs, protesting what was going on at the Knesset as advanced by the Prime Minister, rallying in 20 towns and cities, again blocking traffic, sometimes involving the police, called generally throughout the nation of Israel a day of disruption. Doctors showed their support by gathering outside the Tel Aviv Museum of Art. Women's rights activists, likewise, dressed in crimson robes, which, of course, were inspired by characters from The Handmaid's Tale, the novel by Margaret Atwood, also became a major television production, talking about and protesting the patriarchal totalitarian state that they identified in many of these reforms. They also marched in the cities and towns throughout the State of Israel. Not nearly as aggressive, not nearly as numerous as those protests were in March of this year, when some trade unions also shut down large parts of the Israeli economy, again, to protest the government's efforts to curb judicial power. But nonetheless, significant because this is coming back. The protests once again did lead to some clashes with police, and we got some water cannons to prevent them from the protesters from moving up and down major highways there. About 71 people arrested overall in these continued demonstrations. Now, significant to note that Benjamin Netanyahu has walked back some of his initiatives in this area. Initially, he was going to propose that Parliament could override Supreme Court decisions, and recognizing that that was receiving not only highly unfavorable reviews, but actually strong opposition both inside and outside government, he withdrew some of that. But he resumed his and resurrected a lot of his focus on this past week when he suggested that there should be limits on when the Supreme Court could overrule the parliament. And all of that is what prompted the protests beginning on Tuesday of this week and continuing to this day. Much of this, again, is focused upon a disagreement between some major initiatives inside the Republic of Israel, some religious and nationalist state perspectives, and their opponents, secular and more pluralist visions, all of that evidenced in these protests happening in Israel. When we come back, I'm going to tell you more about why this is significant, why it's all about the rule of law, and why it is significant that the Israeli population is demanding that its judiciary be held in the high esteem that it has been held, and it's not be compromised as a part of this initiative on behalf of the Prime Minister and others allied with him. Come back for that discussion. We'll talk more about this and the rule of law in America.
Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole kit and caboodle. Call 608-819-8255. Okay then, bye.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. There's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Starting at 6 a.m., the Mayor and Mino.
Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show.
10 to 12,
As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, the Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, the Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Starting at 6 a.m., the Mayor and Mino.
Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show.
10 to 12,
As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, the Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, the Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
And we are back this morning on Morning Cannolis, beginning our discussion today. 2 hours of important discussion about the rule of law, justice, government in the United States by talking about what's going on in Israel, our ally overseas, and specifically this renewed effort by Benjamin Netanyahu, who is the Prime Minister of Israel, to restrict the capacity of the judiciary in Israel to act as it should. Protests of significant dimension seen just again this past week, as they did back in May and in March and again in May of this past year, protesting the efforts by the government to roll back the traditions of the judiciary in the state of Israel. There's a bill in particular that passed the Knesset by a majority of 64 to 56 votes, giving provisional support to a bill that would reduce the ways in which the Supreme Court can overrule elected officials, limiting their capacity to decide whether or not their conduct is legal under the law. And if that bill passes, 2 further votes in the Knesset in the coming weeks, that will stop the courts, the Supreme Court and other courts there in Israel, from using the legal standard of reasonableness to countermand the government when it steps out of line. Now, reasonableness is one of those legal standards that's used by courts around the world. We have our own variations of that right here in the United States of America. We often talk about actions of government being reasonable and rational, related to some legitimate purpose of government, advancing some public interests. Reasonableness is this legal standard, once again, used in many nations to determine whether or not the conduct of government is rational and decent and right and good and consistent with the law. It's done not only in Australia that way, Britain, Canada, all kinds of nations around the world adopt that. If this decision by the Knesset to rescind that, one wonders out loud what the standard would be. What kind of thing could courts legitimately apply when it comes to assessing the rightness and the correctness of government action if you don't have a standard of reasonableness in place? That's one of the things that is the focus of the protests now nationwide in the state of Israel. The Supreme Court justices probably angered the government early this year by using that that very standard of reasonableness to stop a leading ultra-Orthodox politician whose support is crucial to shoring up Netanyahu's coalition from becoming a cabinet minister. They intervened on that. And because of their use of that standard, again, the prime minister and others allied with him seeking to clip the wings of the justices who are attempting to level the playing field when it comes, again, to the kinds of things that courts should do and governments should be involved in. Last night, we saw the first step of this country becoming a dictatorship. That was the comment by Grace Sherman. She's an educator in central Tel Aviv. A lot of people very, very upset at what's going on right now in Israel. We will continue to monitor that situation. Along the way, of course, Netanyahu himself says this is not the end of democracy, but rather the strengthening of democracy, he said. And he is obviously moving forward on those plans. The protests aren't going away. And the concern, again, although it is not as dramatic as it was in March and in spring of this year, it will certainly increase as the Knesset continues with these movements to, again, implement what the prime minister wants to do when it comes to compromising this fundamental notion, the rule of law. Differences among politicians there about what should happen, but nonetheless, a source of concern for everyone across the planet looking to this republic to understand what is going on. Why is that relevant? Why is it significant that we should think about what's happening in Israel? Well, obviously, they're an ally of ours. They're another republic, another democracy on the face of this planet. And as we think about our own Supreme Court, our own justices here, we have our own concerns about our justices, not exclusively because of some of the decisions that they have rendered. In many cases, reasonable people can differ about those conclusions that they have reached. In some areas, probably not, but in many areas, that's what our system is all about. It depends upon checks and balances. It depends upon people arguing cases and coming before the Supreme Court and advancing particular views that may not be popular, may be popular, and in the end, having justices decide what the law of the country, of our nation, should be. A lot of that is compromised when one wonders about the very ethical focus and core of the very Supreme Court justices who are making those all-important decisions. And sure enough, just this past week, we had some more indication that we have reason to be concerned about the ethical, moral, if you will, compass of our Supreme Court. I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about these issues. They're probably not at the top of the list when it comes to our recent focus here in the United States on ethics matters related to our Supreme Court. But we heard again this past week some reporting about Clarence Thomas, who has his previous involvement, not only with his wife, Ginny, and things that she has done in her private capacity, that are also before Justice Thomas in the Supreme Court when it comes to the election of 2020. We also, of course, recall well his involvement with Arlen Crowe and others with whom he has received significant benefits. This past week, we heard some reporting about payments to an aide made to Associate Justice Thomas back in 2019, 2021, some payments that were sent through Venmo from lawyers who then were involved in Supreme Court business. Don't know a lot more about that, but that happened as well. That reporting as well this week gives one pause about what that is all about. And then we also heard about Sonia Sotomayor this past week. Open records requests by the Associated Press inquiring about her earnings from book sales and some speaking engagements. A report released by AP this last week indicated that Justice Sotomayor's university visits there to speak to students facilitated mass book sales that led to the justice earning nearly $4 million from a memoir, My Beloved World, and some collections of children's books that she has also authored. Now, to her credit, she has also issued some statements about how this happens. She has indicated that its code of ethics encourages judges to stay connected to community activities and to engage with the public, including by writing on both legal and non-legal subjects, by engaging with the public, and including, of course, educators and students on campuses. When we come back after this break, we'll talk about the broad issues related to ethics, not only those stories coming out of this past week, but what's going to happen this coming week. This coming week, in connection with this all-important issue related to the integrity of our rule of law here in the United States of America and our Supreme Court.
If happy little bluebirds fly, beyond the rainbow. Why, oh, why can't I?
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
10 to 12,
As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Town Call.
On WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Challenges to the White House bid for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. Sources tell ABC News his campaign fired about a dozen staffers after making a decision to cut costs. The governor was criticized by former President Donald Trump, who spoke at a conservative event in West Palm Beach, Florida, and touted the record from his first 4 years in office.
Did something that nobody else could have ever done. What we did during that period of time was incredible. And more importantly now, we're going to do it again, and we're going to do it even better.
In Georgia, authorities are searching for a man identified as Andre Longmore, accused of shooting and killing four people in the city of Hampton on Saturday. In Pennsylvania, Michael Burham's back in custody after 9 days on the run. He broke out of a county jail in the northwestern part of the state July 6th. He was apprehended Saturday. In the Philadelphia suburbs, flooding killed three people and left four missing in Bucks County. More than 50 million people in the Northeast are under flood alerts. This is ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734.
School on! Save on!
Sounds like it's back to school time, and Staples has great prices on everything you need for school. Save on markers and crayons. Save on notebooks and folders. And right now at Staples, save big on tech with up to $250 off select computers. Staples, where savings for school are always in session. N729, in-store only. See associate for details.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino.
Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show.
10 to 12,
As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show.
3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct.
4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dominic Cruz. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 a.m. and 97.9 WGBW.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out. Because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you...
And you could be me?
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way...
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute.
Weekdays from 4 until 6
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
We are back this morning. We are talking, as before, about the United States Supreme Court, doing a little wrap-up in the wake of our three arc of discussions of the past weeks about these major decisions issued by our Supreme Court in the month of June and before that as well. And talking right now about this continuing issue related to the ethics of the Supreme Court, that has focused principally, of course, upon Clarence Thomas and his on-the-bench, off-the-bench engagements. Also, of course, focused principally on Samuel Alito and a particular fishing trip that he took a number of months ago, years ago, actually, involving a friend of his. Some additional focus, probably of lesser significance, but all of this getting an awful lot of attention, also involving the Chief Justice, John Roberts, some issues related to Neil Gorsuch, and most recently some issues related to Sonia Sotomayor. All of this, again, to greater and lesser degrees. Not all of it probably problematic. Some of it certainly cases where there are matters that are pending before the Supreme Court, and you have got involvement of justices deciding those cases of parties with whom they have personal relationships and from whom they've received individual monetary or other benefits. That's highly problematic. Some of these other things may not be. The point is that now that we are looking generally at the Supreme Court, asking new questions about the integrity of the court generally, about the notion that we should expect from the court the highest standards of conduct, certainly on the bench, but also off the bench as well. And we do not have that. The respect for the court declines as it has, not only in part because of some of the decisions rendered recently and in past years. Those can be the subject of legitimate debate in America. These other issues related to integrity and ethics and the basis for your making those decisions in the first place, those are more straightforward. And those should, in fact, be incorporated into a unified and composite code of ethics for the United States Supreme Court. As we've talked previously on this broadcast, all of the other hundreds of other federal judges, district court judges, appellate court judges throughout our United States of America are subject to an ethics code that requires that they be recused when indeed there are conflicts of interest, perceived conflicts of interest, or real conflicts of interest in connection with their deciding cases of parties with whom they have personal relationships or personal involvements of some kind. Sometimes also financial issues require recusals as well. More generally, we have a right to know as Americans because although they're not elected, they are appointed for life. They serve in these all-important positions that tell us once again what the law is in our nation. We have a right to know about their sources of income. And if they're getting income from sources other than their regular salaries, we should know about that in the interest of transparency, in the interest of ensuring once again that they're not receiving monies inappropriately from parties, sources that would in any way compromise their legitimacy and their integrity on the bench. All of that prompting an awful lot of focus, as perhaps never before, on the United States Supreme Court, and yes, getting attention by the United States Congress as well. We have talked about this at length in the past. We know that the Senate Judiciary Committee, headed by the senior senator from Illinois, Dick Durbin, has conducted some interviews and also some on-site public hearings about whether or not there should be the imposition of a specific code upon the Supreme Court to guide it in its ethical travels through these kinds of issues. And we know that the committee had also invited the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court to appear in front of that committee. The Supreme Court Chief Justice declined to do so and instead issued a statement indicating the Supreme Court continues to abide by the highest levels of decorum and appropriate behavior. Nonetheless, an awful lot of continuing concern about that as that code is still being awaited. No one has yet established that code for the Supreme Court, either by the court itself or by the legislature. Recently, Dick Durbin, again the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, has indicated that as soon as next week, the coming business days on Capitol Hill in the United States Congress, he will present to his full committee this legislation to seek to impose upon the Supreme Court a code of ethics. And there'll be a vote, he promises, sometime this coming week upon that major legislation. Now, that legislation, as it goes on to the floor of the Senate, if in fact the majority leader there schedules it for that vote almost certainly to fail, simply because you need 60 votes to pass that kind of a thing in the United States Senate. Plainly, there's also legislation pending in the House of Representatives that likewise not going to pass anytime soon. But the initiative, the movement forward on this legislation to try to accomplish legislatively what the Supreme Court itself has not done is significant in the history of our nation. It is significant as we together with the Supreme Court, with the Congress, as the people of America try to address this issue related to the future and the present conduct of our Supreme Court members. An awful lot of focus on whether the legislature can do this. I would offer the view, as I have before, the legislature is involved in all sorts of things, in checks and balances with respect to the United States Supreme Court, including establishing a budget, setting the numbers of justices, providing some oversight and direction for something called the Administrative Office of the United States Courts, all kinds of things that go in both directions there on Capitol Hill. From my perspective, the perspective of many other people, no prohibition, no legal constitutional prohibition on the Congress imposing this code of ethics. Nonetheless, the Supreme Court itself should do this as a way of addressing this issue, bringing this under control, because as investigators, both journalistic and otherwise, continue to look at this, the focus does not make this issue any better. If anything, it reveals increasing concerns, legitimate concerns among the population about what our Supreme Court is doing, again, especially off the bench, that would suggest that its opinions, which are significant and real and substantive, might be subject to question if, in fact, the ethics are not clear. Now, let's take a little bit of a reassessment of what our Supreme Court did in about 10 to 12 cases just this past term. I'm going to describe them very, very generally. We have talked about them before. It is important in this discussion to note the significance of the kinds of things that our Supreme Court is doing, not only in the context of this ethics consideration, but also for some other views I'm going to offer this morning as well. We know that on June 29th, by a vote of 6-3, the court ruled that race-conscious admissions policies at Harvard, which is a private institution, and the University of North Carolina, a public one, were unlawful. Again, those apply to state court, institutions. They apply to public institutions, private institutions throughout our United States of America. We know that on June 30th, one day later, also by a 6-3 vote, the court ruled that the Biden administration's plan to wipe out more than $400 million in student debt was not authorized by Congress. And we know, interestingly, as you just heard on the news right here in civic media, that in the wake of that, the president just yesterday announced about $39 billion in the cancellation of student debt for some 800,000 borrowers. Now, this does not replace the plan, the initiative that the Supreme Court ruled could not go ahead, but it does, in fact, provide some relief to some borrowers out there. It focuses upon 8 million people who use these income-driven repayment plans. And for decades, many of the companies that process those loans made extensive mistakes in tracking those payments. This initiative announced by the president yesterday corrects those and basically restores some of that debt, returns some of those monies to those student borrowers, not nearly at the level of the proposal that the Secretary of Education and the President had previously proposed, but nonetheless, some response to what the Supreme Court had shut down again on June 30th. We know as well that on June 30th, by a 6-3 vote, the court significantly decided that the First Amendment allows a web designer in Colorado who objected to same-sex marriages to articulate that opposition and prohibiting that to a state law that prohibited discrimination based on sexual orientation. We know as well that in a major case, 6-3 vote decided on June 27th, the court rejected, thankfully, a legal theory that would have given state legislatures largely unchecked powers to set the rules for federal elections. Major case involving something called the independent state legislature doctrine, drop-kicked and rejected by the Supreme Court. On June 8th, earlier, by 5-4, the court ruled that Alabama had in fact diluted the power of black voters by drawing a congressional voting map with a single district in which black voters made up a majority, a real affirmation of the Voting Rights Act in Section 2 in particular. On June 15th, the Supreme Court held that the Indian Child Welfare Act, a 1978 law that keeps Native American children with their tribes and preserves their heritage, is in fact constitutional, maintaining that important law in that area as well. On June 29th, by a 9-0 vote, a unanimous vote of the Supreme Court, the court adopted a new standard and broadened accommodations that employers have to make for workers' religious practices after a postal worker refused to work on Sundays for religious reasons. A case that, again, applied to all people of faith, changing the ways in which we address accommodations in the workplace for people of faith. We know that on May 25th, in a major environmental case, the court ruled that the Clean Water Act does not allow the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate discharges into wetlands near bodies of water unless they have a continuous surface connection, which is the way the Supreme Court described it, to those waters. A real hit to the Environmental Protection Agency in its enforcement of the Clean Water Act. Much narrower grounds, as the Supreme Court did a last term with respect to the Clean Air Act. We know that on May 11th, by a 5-4 vote, case coming out of California, the court upheld a specific law that has implications for the Interstate Commerce Clause, a state law, a California law that addressed cruelty to animals, saying that the court could in fact require pork sold there but produced elsewhere to come from breeding pigs housed in spaces that allow them to move around more freely. An affirmation of the Interstate Commerce Clause also packed into that, a voice for in opposition to animal cruelty. We know that on May 18th, the Supreme Court, in a major intellectual property case, ruled that Andy Warhol and his estate had improperly drawn a prominent photographer's portrait of Prince for an image of the musician that is the estate licensed to a magazine. A challenge there to intellectual property, but an affirmation of the fundamental copyright laws of our state, of our United States, and the fair use doctrine in particular. We know that on May 18th, there were a couple of much related decisions, both of them 9-0. The court sort of sidestepped a ruling on whether a law that protects social media platforms from lawsuits shields YouTube from a suit over videos supporting terrorism. But at the same time, on that same date, the most important case of that day, the court ruled significantly that internet platforms may not be sued for aiding and abetting international terrorism by failing to remove videos supporting the Islamic State. All those kinds of cases, about 10 to 12 of those just recited in summary fashion, underscore a number of very important things. Again, the significance of the issues, the topics that our Supreme Court has taken up again this term. 60 cases altogether. You can take a look at those by going on the website. We've talked about some other collateral decisions also made by the Supreme Court in major areas that reflect our lives, both in commerce, in education, in our relationships with others, many, many things that impact the days and the way in which we live our days here in the United States of America. They also reveal some other things about this court that is true this term and also previous terms. That is, this court is not at all disinclined to turn back precedent, to take the concept of stare decisis, which means you adopt a known law, a known decision of previous courts, and apply that. Appropriately, in appropriate circumstances, courts do that. They return, they reverse decisions. This court, much inclined to do that, as it did in some major areas this term and, of course, last term as well, sometime turning back the precedents, the established rules and regulations by which we have lived for 30, 40, 50 years in this country. The reversal, for example, of the affirmative action options available to universities and colleges in our nation that was available for 40 years, reversed just this past term. And of course, last year, the reversal in the Dobbs decision of almost 50 years of privacy rights, reproductive rights in America. When we come back after this break, I'm going to talk with you more about some of the significant takeaways from this past term. And we're going to get to some callers who are also on the line waiting to talk with us here on Morning Cannolis.
But I go my own way, that's my philosophy. I don't care if he's a crook or just a millionaire. There's no doubt about it, I'll sing and I'll shout it, 'cause I don't care. Oh, I don't care, I don't care. I want my share. Don't try to rearrange me. There's nothing can change me.
Living happily ever after isn't always a reality. If you're over 50 and are considering divorce, attorney Andrea Gage with the Everson Law Firm can provide the guidance you need. Andrea focuses on silver divorces, the kind that get more complicated over time and present unique challenges. A family, multiple properties, significant assets. Andrea and the team at Everson Law have the experience to protect your interests. Call Everson Law to set up an appointment with Andrea today. It's never too late to be happy. Everson Law, 920-435-3734.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup. Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
This summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Woo-hoo!
Starting at 6 a.m., The Mayor and Mino. Then at 8, The Earl Ingram Show. 10 to 12, As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, The Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, The Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, The Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Never saw you look quite so pretty.
And we're back
before.
In this first hour here at Morning Cannolis. We're talking, as before, about the United States Supreme Court now offering some perspectives on this term not yet completed, but the major decisions issued by the Supreme Court, pretty much done for this term, commenting right before the break that this is a court in this term and previous terms not at all disinclined to overrule prior decisions that it has made, to overrule precedent and to turn back the clock in some of these very significant ways, cases and reliance upon the law that we have pursued for 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years here in America, a court that looks at precedent and sometimes, not always, turns back the clock and makes those decisions in ways that rescind the previous decisions that it has made. A couple of other observations. Also, this court seems to have a very limited view of government generally, certainly with respect to the powers of the executive branch. We have seen in some of these major cases that the Supreme Court is very, very reluctant to permit the executive branch, the president in particular, to act in those cases where the proposals, the initiatives of the president are big, if they're significant, they're important, and they're new, and we have not seen them before. And so, for example, in the area of student loan forgiveness, the Supreme Court just this past year, again, past term and past year, indicated that what the president was proposing was simply too large, implicated too many financial considerations, novel, and that only the Congress can do that kind of thing. And there may be something to that concept. The president's and the president president's concern, the concerns of prior presidents as well, as probably this, that in a situation where the Congress does not act to engage in some of these major issues in the environment, in education, and in other areas, in commerce, in healthcare, all these kinds of things, presidents are prompted to act and then are told by the Supreme Court they cannot act in these areas because of separation of powers, checks and balances. Supreme Court, again, limiting the view of government and of the executive in particular to act in ways that will make the government work and go forward when another branch of government, the Congress, fails to act or does so incompletely. And finally, an observation about differences on the court. We know that there is this so-called ideological split, 6-3 or so, but it's more than just that. There are some fundamental views about equal protection on the court, and those were exhibited certainly in the court's discussions of race this past year and this past term. A view that from one side of the court views the Equal Protection Clause as static, as basically being colorblind and not remedial in nature. And on the other side of the court, viewing the Equal Protection Clause in the 14th Amendment as very remedial and non-static and active, an attempt by the living Constitution to bring people of color and other people of immutable characteristics into the full enjoyment of American life. Differences of what equal protection means on the court itself. And then finally, differences of views about what America is and how we look and how we act today. An awful lot of attention, again, on race in particular, but other areas as well, that indicates that race is one of those issues that we, in some ways, no longer need to consider. Now, in this major case involving Alabama, we know that that was not the case, but we've also seen in other areas a rolling back in voting rights and in other areas of a focus on attempting to remedy the racial issues of our nation. And we have on the same court a focus on by some of the justices who recognize that we still need to wrestle with race and still need to understand that our nation, to become the more perfect union that it was promised in our founding documents, needs to work even more. Lots of observations there about the Supreme Court and the term that continues but is now completed in its major cases that have been decided. We've got a number of callers on the line. We appreciate that tremendously. We appreciate the callers. I'm going to begin with Dana from La Crosse. Dana, calling in this morning. Appreciate very much your comment or question today.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. Lovely Saturday morning here in La Crosse. I'm just sitting on my patio.
Beautiful.
Enjoying my coffee with, unfortunately, I wasn't able to hunt down any cannolis, but
all right.
I'm having one in spirit.
Very good.
Jim, always great topics, important show for that you present here for you, for us. The two most important topics, I think, right now going on in our government are the January 6th investigation and this in-your-face corrupt court. I don't know what it takes to get the people awake on both sides of what's going on. I think we do have a good percentage of people that do understand everything. You did mention Dick Durbin is leading the charge on the court thing, but frankly, Jim, I do find him a bit soft, a little acquiescent, I guess you could say. Someone I do admire with his relentless pursuit of corruption in our government. I'm sure you know who he is, Sheldon Whitehouse.
Sheldon Whitehouse, sure.
I believe he's from Maryland. But I've seen him on some of his presentations over the years, and he is wonderful and just exposes so much, but it just doesn't seem to get any traction to get anything done. I mean, Jim, I thought when the last election, when the Democrats got that one more seat in the Senate, that was going to give them a lot of investigatory powers. And we got the House doing all these ridiculous investigations where there's some serious ones that the Senate could surely be undertaking now. And I'm not completely sure they are. I'm not hearing of any subpoenas or anything that they're using this new power with. One idea I did have, Jim, I think would be wonderful, an idea that maybe you get Sheldon Whitehouse on your show sometime for maybe
right,
a half
very
hour.
Good. And well, I would call the senator and ask him to join us.
I would love to hear your two brilliant minds discussing these two topics.
Or at least his, right?
I'll take your comments, Jim. And you have a great weekend.
Dana, thanks so much. Thanks so much. We appreciate the call from Beautiful Cross today. A couple of things as we go into the top of the hour here. Yes, it's January 6th. You have anticipated the discussion. We're going to talk a lot about January 6th right after this top of the hour break. As to things going forward, yes, this is frustrating, right? Sheldon Whitehouse, it's his legislation, actually. He authored it. He is the one who is advancing this in the United States Senate. It is frustrating because, once again, it is not going to get passed, not with a filibuster in place. There needs to be more aggressiveness. One wonders out loud, bringing together a couple of your thoughts, Dana, if the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee had subpoenaed the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, wouldn't that have been interesting, right? To see whether or not we can subpoena the Chief Justice to come and testify, an invitation declined by him. So lots of things to unpack here. Dana, we appreciate that comment so very much. We need to be focused on this. This is important for America. I think you're right, identifying as one of the top two or three issues we are confronting right now in the rule of law. When we come back after the top of the hour, more callers coming in commenting about these and other issues. And then, as I promised, we're going to talk more about updating all the investigations, civil and criminal, faced by our former President Donald Trump. Stay with us for that conversation right after the top of the hour here on Morning Cannolis.
Summer, 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW has a new starting lineup.
Starting at 6 a.m., the Mayor and Mino.
Then at 8, the Earl Ingram Show.
10 to 12,
As Goes Wisconsin. At noon, Civic Media Network News. At 12:15, Town Call. 1 to 3, the Todd Alba Show. 3 to 4, Matt Flynn Direct. 4 to 6, the Devil's Advocates with Dom and Crude. And 6 to 7, the Maggie Dawn Show.
On 1590 AM and 97.9 WGBW.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always
ABC
streaming on the
News,
Civic Media
I'm
app.
Brian Clark.